Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Ellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to have in-depth conversations about really important topics and subjects that make such a difference in our lives. I also want to remind everyone, if you go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, you will receive special reports, you will have updates, you even get archives of this radio show. So if you've missed it when it's been happening, it'll be sent right to your inbox. And also my Facebook page is another great place to go because I do post on a daily basis great information, articles, education. It's all about getting empowered with truthful information so we can make the most informed decisions possible regarding our health and well-being. And talking about health and well-being, I just want to share with my audience that I am facilitating a special group of people to come with me to a very amazing place in Costa Rica called the Rythmia Life Advancement Center. So February 13th for 6 nights, 7 days, I will be rounding up a group of people who want to come to have a very unique experience. It's a combination of spiritual transformation and physical healing because we're going to be having an opportunity to experience the transformative medicine from the Amazon, the plant medicines that have been used for thousands of years under the auspices of traditionally trained shaman from South America. This is actually the only medically licensed plant medicine center in the world. And it is also one of the most amazing luxury resorts that includes a whole protocol and program for healing the body from farm to table organic foods, from getting 3 very special forms of colonics, 3 massages. You get live blood cell analysis done. You're medically evaluated when you get there. You actually are also receiving volcanic mud baths. There's daily yoga, meditation, some special personal growth and development classes, and it's situated in one of the blue zones of the world. You know, those blue zones that are places of extreme health and longevity. So this is a really unique experience. I call it, it's not an ordinary vacation. It's a vacation out of the ordinary that will allow you to have a profound shift of consciousness and also a new level of health, clarity, energy, and purpose in life. So it's a very unique and amazing experience, and I invite you to check it out. It's on the homepage of my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. You can always email me, and that's drselman@whatwomenmustknow.com. We have a group of rooms reserved until September 30th. So you have to book in before September 30th, even though the event is taking place February 13th. It's a really popular place, and we want to make sure we have the rooms available for people who want to come. So it'll be a small group who are coming with me of like-minded souls. And if this calls to you, if it appeals to you, if you're curious about it, if you're ready for some major shifts in your life or just need a place to really heal and regenerate and rejuvenate, then do consider coming along on this program that will be happening in Costa Rica. That's February 13th to 19th. Okay, so I also want to talk about regenerating and rejuvenating, and today we're going to talk about how to naturally treat and prevent osteoporosis, a really important topic. We're going to be exploring ways to provide the strategies, the understanding, some of the key nutrition that will allow you to rebuild and of course, prevent bone loss. But we need to know the whole story about our bones before we can take right action and regenerate our bones. by the way, which we can do at any age. I have a wonderful guest, Dr. Laura Kelly, who is the author of a very impressive book. I have to say, I love this book. It's called The Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook, but it's just so much more than a cookbook. It really lays the whole story out in a very profound way. I've been researching the whole story of osteoporosis for 20 years, and I just have been so impressed with what Dr. Laura Kelly has written, because she's put it all together, and I absolutely agree with what she's saying. So let me just tell you a little bit about Dr. Laura Kelly. She is a licensed traditional Chinese medicine practitioner and doctor of acupuncture and oriental medicine. She completed her medical training and doctorate at Yosan University in Los Angeles. Her private practice focuses on primary care and chronic disease. She is working with a research group to document the biochemical effects of Chinese herbs on fatigue and is leading the investigation on a non-surgical treatment for paralysis. She is the co-author of the Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook, and she lives and works in Topanga, California, beautiful part of the world. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Laura Kelly to the show today. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks.
Well, you're so very welcome, and I have been reading your book, and I have been impressed, and I think you have such a wealth of information, and it's so comprehensive, so I just really want to congratulate you on putting it all together in a way that is easy for people to understand and really get the story straight, as I like to say, because we're so confused about our bones, aren't we?
Yeah, well, thanks very much for the praise. You know, it started because of my mother, so she's not a doctor, she's not a scientist, so it was a starting place of really, how do I help someone understand what they need to do and why? And I think that it's really important. I find in my practice a lot, helping people understand the reasons why makes them want to help more, help themselves more. So it was very important to me to really lay it out as clearly as possible.
Well, I just want you to know, Laura, that I'm very inclined to traditional Chinese medicine. I have studied some traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture, and I collaborate with a colleague who is a master Chinese herbalist in my practice, providing my patients with customized Chinese herbs to address these underlying issues that are really critical. So it just makes so much sense when we understand more of the dynamics that go on. And Chinese medicine really helps to give that depth of information and guidance and solutions, too. So I'm envious. If I had my life to live over again, I think I would have devoted it to Chinese medicine. but anyway, for this lifetime, I'm doing enough. So let's start with what I'd like you to talk about are the key myths and truths about bones. I think we need to set a really solid, truthful foundation for everyone. So we have lots of myths out there, and let's counter them with the truth.
Sure. You can sort of help guide me on this as well, I'm sure. But, I mean, the first thing that is important to remember, and I think that people don't really think about, is that the bone is a living tissue. So it's not just that you grow your bones when you're a child and now you have bone, and it's there all the time and it just is there. It's fully living just as every other tissue in your body, like your skin, and it regenerates like all of your other, most of your other tissues do. So it's in a continual process of growth and rebirth, just like us. You know, it's sort of, again, another microcosm. So because it's a living tissue, it needs to constantly replenish itself. You need to constantly have the minerals and the nutrients and the vitamins that are required for the system to work properly. And also, it's important to remember that that dynamic system exists in a larger dynamic system. So all of those dynamic systems have to be working properly for any of the smaller ones to work properly. So I think that the dynamic nature of bone and the dynamic nature of our bodies is something that people don't think about, especially, again, in terms of bone. other myths about bone?
I'll throw one in. I think one of the myths is that bone loss is inevitable as we age.
Oh, okay.
How about that?
Right. Not everybody gets osteoporosis, so there's definitely that. And one of the way that this book started is when my mother called and she said, you know, you're in school, I know you're busy, but my doctor says I have to take this shot, and I don't want to. And so I said, well, listen, I need some time to really delve into this, so I'll get back to you in a few months. And the first thing I did was I took a fracture map of the world, and I said, well, where are there low fractures and where are there high fractures and why? So not every country has a high fracture rate. A lot of countries have a low fracture rate, 30% of the population, you know, 20% of the population and of people over 50 instead of 50, 60, 70, 80% as we have as we age here. So not everybody has osteoporosis. Everybody has bone loss, yes. Bone loss, especially in women, is tied heavily to estrogen. So there is a small amount of bone loss that is inevitable, but that does not mean osteoporosis.
And that's
so that
such
is
an
for
important
sure.
point. That's you know, I think it's worth repeating that, is that you can have bone loss, but it does not necessarily mean you have increased risk of fracture. Our body has actually given us some latitude here as long as we have healthy bone.
I think actually what you just said is also a really important point. Not only every woman will experience some level of bone loss as the estrogen declines, maybe 2%, maybe 5%, maybe even up to 10%. But there's two issues here. That doesn't necessarily mean osteoporosis, and it doesn't necessarily mean fracture. And osteoporosis doesn't necessarily mean fracture. And thin bones doesn't necessarily mean fracture. Because there are two components to bone in my perspective, and one of them is left out in the Western diagnosis, which is we're looking at density. All we're looking at is what's the density of the trabecular bone, how much mineral is deposited there. But there's no taking into account the flexibility of that bone. So if you look at the Japanese, for example, you have very thin bones comparative to the West, but you have on the traditional diets, you had much lower rates of fracture. So if we looked at their DEXA scans, we would say, oh, well, all Japanese women have osteoporosis, right? But their rates of fracture are relatively low, or were relatively low. And that has to do probably, you know, I'm assuming, just from looking at the diet and looking at the way bones work, is that they have much more flexible bones.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting. I think another myth that I want you to address is that osteoporosis has been classified as a disease, and therefore, of course, it has to be treated with a pharmaceutical drug. So that's the myth. So let's start from there.
Right. Well, I mean, disease has been defined in many, many ways in different dictionaries, and you could theoretically say that any sort of malfunctioning of the body is a disease. But the way that we conceive of disease sort of in the West is something that maybe you contract, or something that forms in your body that's not supposed to be there. And there are situations in which there are genetic mutations which affect bone growth, which would be considered a disease. But for most people, and most people that I'm addressing sort of in the West, it is just a deficiency of nutrient. And there are variations within that, of course, but essentially, again, bone is a tissue and it needs foundational nutrients in order to grow, and if they're not there, it can't grow. And if you look at the numbers that are put out from the Center for Disease Control on deficiency of nutrients in the U.S., they're staggering and they're shocking. And it's not surprising at all that we have the amount of not only bone loss but chronic disease that we have in this country. In my perspective, and I like to shift the perspective of the patients that I work with, the word disease is so heavy and complicated, and, oh, my God, I have a disease. How am I going to fix it? And people get the report, oh, my God, I have osteoporosis. I have this terrible disease. But if you switch that perspective and you say, oh, well, you know, I have to balance my nutrients a little better and look at my diet, and I have a deficiency which I can correct, that really shifts the mind space around the issue.
I think it shifts the mind space in a really profound way. If someone is thinking they have a disease, just that thought to have a disease creates so much stress and fear, and you know, you have to get into action with something that's going to stop this disease. But if you see it as a symptom of deficiency, of compromised functioning of various systems of the body, then you can take action that actually
right.
can reverse and rejuvenate and regenerate the bones. And so let's talk about that as another myth. So the myth is that when you lose bone, and that's it.
Right. And that also is not the case. There are so many mechanisms that we can employ. Nutrition and rectifying the nutritional deficiencies is definitely a key part of the issue. And again, if you look at the CDC numbers, 70% of people in America are deficient in certain nutrients, 60, 50. The numbers are really high, and these are key nutrients for bone health. So it's just the simple act of rectifying those deficiencies will cause your bone tissue to strengthen. And then there's, of course, exercise, right? And the way that the bone is structured is that inside the bone are retired osteoblasts, and those are the bone-generating cells, and they migrate to the inside of the cell, and they respond to stress. So if you put stress on your bone, mechanical stress, exercise or running or even, you know, playing volleyball, anything that you're going to do that's going to impact the bone, those old retired cells will stress that sense and they'll tell the body, oh, we need to be strong. So there are a number of ways, and, you know, diet and exercise, of course, are two that are really key, and either and both together are even better. And another aspect, another thing you can do that just, I mean, there are a number of single approaches that you can take. Just exercise alone will strengthen the bone. Just rectifying your diet will strengthen the bone. Adding phytoestrogens into your diet also is another key way of accessing bone strength and bone health, because the bone growth is tied to estrogen, which is why we lose bone when we lose our estrogen. So adding in a phytoestrogen, which sits in the beta receptor and not the alpha receptor of the estrogen receptor, is a positive estrogen receptor, positive for health, not positive for growth. So you're not looking at tumor growth or anything like that. You're looking at actually a protective receptor mechanism. So phytoestrogen can then strengthen the bone even on its own. And also in combination with exercise, you're going to get double the benefit. So there's all sorts of ways to help your bones as you age, and you can regrow and re-strengthen your bones.
So people need to hold that thought. They have the ability to repair, rebuild, regenerate. I have two stories I want to tell you. When I was in Australia last year, they did a report on a study that was done out of University in Queensland, and they took a group of people, women actually, in their 70s and 80s, and instead of going very gingerly and putting them on light weights, they actually put them on heavy weights. Obviously, mm-hmm. they had to build up, but they were building them up to be able to, you know, deadlift their own weight. That's what these women were able to do. They became incredibly strong. And mm-hmm. there's always been fear that if you take elderly, that they're fragile and their bones are going to, you know, kind of disintegrate. But they found the opposite to be true. And there was, in one case, I know, like a 5.8% increase in bone density just by working with weights. Nothing else. Nothing else. They didn't
right.
change the diet. And there's another story. I recently came back from a conference that was created and sponsored by a woman named Teresa Tapp, and she's created a technique called the T-Tapp technique that is really about muscle activation. She doesn't use equipment. She just uses your own muscle tension activation. And she mm-hmm. has with her an 89-year-old woman that is kind of shadowing her and is on her CDs, showing that the really senior women can be participating. So by doing this T-Tapp program 15 minutes a day, and also by taking some key nutrients, this woman, her name is Barry, 89 years old, increased her bone density by 18%.
Oh, that's
89.
Fantastic.
Isn't that great? 89%.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think these are the shifts that have to happen in our thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't really know where it comes from, and I don't want to speculate, but there's definitely this perception that men can be vigorous and, you know, go skiing when they're 90, and women were always told that they needed to sort of watch out and they would break their bones and be very careful and that we would lose our power and all sorts of things like that. And it just simply isn't the case, and I want people to understand that as they get older, that that doesn't mean that you have to give up any of these things. And, I think it's important to remember that we can regain, the body itself really wants to live. It really wants to be healthy. It really wants to be vibrant. And given the proper care and the proper nutrients, there isn't any reason you can't retain that.
Absolutely. So, you know what I'd like you to do, Laura? If you could just walk us through in a simple way the physiology of our bones. So people have a basic understanding of what, you know, what are bones, what are bones comprised of, and you shared a little bit about the osteoclasts, the cells that kind of clear away old, dead, and dying bones. But I think in order for, this is my belief, in order for people to make the proper choices regarding the path they need to take to address an issue, in this case bones, we need to have an understanding of how that part of our body works, because that gives us more an appreciation of the strategies that are required. So, well, like you were saying, we think that bone is like this dense material that's just, you know, like chalk, you know? It's really right. Hard and mineralized, which is far from the truth. So could you just kind of give us a basic primer on our bones so we can appreciate how that tissue of our body really works?
Sure. Just basically, on the outside of the bone, this is sort of in general, there are a few different configurations of bone, but in general, the bone is on the outside is a thin layer, and it's called cortical bone, and it's just thickened mineral. And on the inside is actually the more functional part of the bone, which is called the trabecular bone, and it's full of osteons, which are groups of bone cells. And the trabecular bone is the spongy bone, and if you've seen pictures that have shown osteoporotic bone, what you'll see is you'll see a segment of bone with lots of little spaces in it, air spaces. It looks a little bit like a sponge. So this is generally, this is the sort of, within the trabecular bone is housed the bone marrow, and the bone marrow is where we generate our blood cells. So this is obviously a continual process in our life. We're continuously generating blood cells, both red and white, for our immune system. So the bone itself is a factory of blood, and that is just something that has to be living and continuously fed. And the bone itself, the trabecular bone especially, is the one that's measured in the DEXA scans to measure bone density. The trabecular bone is made of, it's got a two-step process in terms of building. And one of them is the collagen structure, which is the sort of scaffold you sort of think of it as. And it's this on purpose, very irregular scaffold structure, because you have to understand that if you can impact your bone from any position. If you fall or if you move or if you're playing sports, you're going to be hitting your bone in all random ways. And the body wants to protect and be able to flex with all kinds of motion. So the body will lay down a very irregular scaffold of collagen. You need a certain trace minerals to go along with the collagen. For example, you need vitamin C in order to cross-link those collagen fibers so that they're not standing alone. They need to move in tandem together as a group. So on top of that structure gets laid down the calcium, basically what we think about calcium for strong bones. So the minerals get laid down on top of the scaffold, and that's mostly calcium and phosphorus. And that's what defines the density of the bone. So that's the basic structure. And then as the bones work, so if you're an athlete, you're gonna cause micro damage to your bones every time you play sports, you know? So you're going to get little fractures, and your body's going to want to fix those. Even just in daily life, you may encounter sort of micro fractures in your bone, and this is completely normal. This is just you using your body. And so the system has to be able to repair itself. And that's done with basically two different types of bone cells. And one of them is called an osteoblast, and that's a bone generator, and it literally lays down the collagen and lays down the calcium. And an osteoclast, which is literally breaks down the bone. So you have these two cells, and they work together, and they actually generate, not each other, but they generate pieces of the system for each other. So it's a complex and completely entwined system of building up and breaking down bone. And this highlights one of the issues with some of the bone drugs, is that they stop bone breakdown, but that means that they also stop bone growth, because you can't interfere with that system and have it not affect the other one. They're too closely linked. So that's the basic physiology of the bone. And inside, like I mentioned before, are the retired osteoblasts, the bone generators, and they migrate to the inside and connect with the nervous system and tell the body, like, let's strengthen the bone, and also have estrogen receptors as well. So that's basically how it works. And this is a continuous cycle throughout your life. Your bone tissue will continue to turn over and continue to regenerate.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? And I think the point you made about the medications and the drugs is really important. So the category of drugs called bisphosphonates, and Fosamax is the most famous one, is actually a very dangerous drug. And I have seen women who've been put on that drug, and put on that drug for years, have increased risk of fractures because it makes such weak bones, because you're actually stopping this natural healing process of laying down new bone cells. The drug appears to be working because it stops this turnover. So it looks like, oh, the bone is maintaining itself, but in actual fact, it's creating poor quality bone and is at increased risk of fracture. So I am strongly opposed to those drugs,
right?
Because they damage the bone and increase our fracture risk. And there are a lot of other side effects with them as well.
Well, there are two things I'd like to mention about that. And one of them is that you can imagine the other problem with taking a bisphosphonate without having your deficiencies resolved is that, like I said, it's very important, for example, for the body to lay down an irregular collagen structure, because you never know where you're going to be hitting the bone. And it's important, that's a very important thing, and you find with certain deficiencies, if you're not cross-linking the fibers, or, you know, there are certain other deficiencies in which maybe the body will lay down the collagen in a more regular pattern. And these are the kinds of things that you see in deficiency. So you're still laying down the collagen structure, but maybe it's not as strong as it could be. So if you're taking a bisphosphonate and it's stopping the bone loss, but you're still growing bone, you may be growing bone for 6 months, which is generally how long those drugs will work really effectively, right? There's a little fall off as time goes on. But you have a 6 month window of bone deposit while the bone is not breaking down at all, because the drug has stopped the bone from breaking down. But if you're working with a deficient mineral deficiencies, for example, you're going to be laying down less than perfect bone. So that's another thing that adds to the fragility aspect of, if you take the drug, the bone you deposit may not be that great. So that's going to add to the fractures. And the other thing that I do want to mention is that there are certain cases, I mean, I personally will want to avoid taking these drugs, of course, and I don't recommend them for anyone. However, in certain very, very, very rare cases when someone is completely unable to do anything about their deficiency and is at a very, very high risk for a vertebral fracture, which is, you know, very debilitating situation, then possibly this may be something that you would want to use. But for 99% of the people out there, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure when it's necessary, but I definitely have a lot of concerns. I've seen it. You know, I've seen it with my patients. And I think we just want to say before we take a break that when we talk about bone loss, we've been focusing a lot on women, but in actual fact, men have bone loss as well. So this is a conversation that men need to hear as well as women. Don't you agree?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, We're going to be sharing with you the strategies and key things you need to know to rebuild bone. So anyone who's been diagnosed with bone loss, stay tuned, and we're also going to talk about preventing bone loss. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we'll be right back.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views. I'm Glenn Ford.
And I'm Nellie Bailey.
Every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, we bring you Black Agenda Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network. It's produced by the team at BlackAgendaReport.com, the cutting-edge publication for news, commentary, and analysis from the Black left.
So check out our view of the world and explore our rich archives on PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward.
And we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Eric Davis, and I want to invite you to join me for Expanding Mind, a show that features conversations about the cultures of consciousness, magic, meditation, neuroscience, religion, technology, psychedelics, weird media. Expanding Mind is devoted to changing your perspective without insulting your intelligence. Tune into the Progressive Radio Network every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And check out the archive page for Expanding Mind on PRN.FM. And remember, keep your minds open.
The author of The Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook. And we're talking all about bones, bone loss, healing osteoporosis naturally, and lots of other things that you probably didn't even know were related to our bones. So Laura, let's talk about some of the key requirements for rebuilding bone at any age. And, you know, we can start with some nutritional support. I think let's start with some key nutrients and supplements. And I also want us to talk about the role of stress. We mentioned exercise a little bit, and you have some great recipes in your book, so let's go there as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the things that's really key, especially in the West, is there's a vitamin which we don't consider and is really not present in our diets. It's vitamin K2, and there is starting to be a lot of discussion about it, and I think that the U.S. government is looking at instituting a dosage recommendation. But this is a really important piece of the bone-building process. There's a hormone, which is protein hormone, which is generated in the body, which actually appears to guide the calcium to the bone. And it doesn't get activated properly unless it has the attachment of vitamin K2. It needs magnesium, it needs vitamin D, and it needs vitamin K2. It's called osteocalcin. And if it isn't activated properly, it just doesn't perform the job of directing the calcium to the bone. So what's happening is that as we're starting to see research, there was a lot of research coming out of Japan a couple of years ago on vitamin K2 because it's very prevalent in their diet. So they started to realize, and the government of Japan is now dealing with an osteoporosis problem as the diet has shifted. And they're saying, oh, well, this is a really important part of our problem. We need to get people to take more of this K2 or eat more natto, which is the bean, which is very high in this vitamin. So we're starting to see a lot of that research come here in America. And we're finding that as we're adding K2 to the diet and looking at bones, what we're actually also seeing as a side effect is a cardiovascular effect, because they were not getting such heavy deposition of calcium outside of the bone, so you're not having so much plaque, so much calcified plaque in the arteries. So it's sort of it's a very important piece of our diet, and it's really simply hasn't been discussed in this country very much. So if I had to say one thing about this, about bone health, start there. I mean, you're going to get great benefit overall to your health just from that one simple addition.
Do you think it's best taken as a supplement? I know I have a water-soluble D that I use in my practice that has K as well, so it's a D and K supplement. Are there natural food sources that we eat in the West that also can provide that type of K2?
Yeah, well, there are two forms. Well, there's a bunch of forms of vitamin K2, but MK4 and MK7 are the two types that appear to affect bone and calcium deposition. MK4 has a short half-life, so it only lasts for a few hours in the body. So you need to sort of top that up every, twice a day or three times a day. And obviously the point being that if you have calcium present but you don't have K2 present because it's already left your system, then the osteocalcin won't work properly. MK7 also is a guide for osteocalcin, and that lasts all day in your body. That has a very long half-life. So they're actually two separate supplements if they're broken down into MK4 or MK7, and I know the supplements that are out now are broken down that way. So, yes, supplement is the best way to do it at the present because it's not prevalent in our diet. MK7 is prevalent in natto, which is the Japanese bean that a lot of them eat for breakfast. A lot of the Japanese eat for breakfast traditionally. For us, vitamin K2 is found in pasture-raised animal organ meats, pasture-raised milk and dairy, and also eggs from pasture-raised chickens. So if you have access to those type of really great, rich whole foods properly lived, properly raised animals, then you're going to be getting some of that vitamin naturally. If you're really in deficit, which almost all of us are, then I suggest for my patients a supplement on top of that, even if you're already getting it naturally, just because it's been so long since your body had any. Let's get a therapeutic dose, get everything working properly, and then drop back down to a normal dietary intake.
Okay, what else? What else is a key supplement for rebuilding our bones?
Well, another key thing that is prevalent is mineral deficiency. And this is due to lots of factors. I mean, farming practices, all those kinds of things, soil health, all those sorts of things, pesticides, genetic modification. Like, there's a whole host of reasons why the soil is not as rich as it used to be. And on top of that, one of the most successfully prescribed drugs in the U.S. are proton pump inhibitors, which change the acidity of the stomach and make it so that you actually do not successfully or well absorb minerals. So you have a huge portion of the population on this drug, and they're not absorbing their minerals on top
or
of having mineral-poor soil.
We should say norprotein.
Norprotein, right.
Which is needed for bones as well.
Yes, all of these are needed for bones, and especially the trace mineral element. Protein we tend to get a lot of in our diet anyway in the West, so it's a less of an issue. But they're really key trace minerals. And even though we need very small amounts of them, if we don't have them, the bones won't be strong, they won't be built properly, as we were mentioning before with the cross-linking of the collagen, for example. So trace minerals are really key. I mean, all trace minerals are required for your body to function perfectly and properly. Zinc, copper, silicon, which is silica, boron, manganese, and strontium are some of the key trace minerals required for bone health. And what I've done is I've sort of, with all the nutrients that I'm suggesting and that I have looked at the mechanism of how the bone is built and figured out which ones are really, really key, I've looked at all of the research and looked at what is actually the real necessary recommendation of dosage for positive bone growth, not just staying here where we are. I mean, I think it's important to mention, and maybe your listeners know this, but the RDAs were originally devised by the government to avoid any major chronic illness like rickets when their soldiers were overseas and civilians were overseas. So they weren't devised for wellness. They were devised for bare minimum. So it's important to go back and look at the RDAs and say, well, that's devised for bare minimum. What is actually the real recommended daily allowance or recommended dietary allowance for this nutrient in order for wellness to happen, in order for avoidance of all chronic disease to happen? And that's something that is a long-term project, I think, for all of us health, you know, minded professionals. But I've done the best I can in looking at how as many studies as I can and seeing where's the safe place for these, not too much, not too little, and very effective.
Are you obviously in favor of making sure you're getting your trace minerals, which generally probably, I mean, I take trace minerals as a supplement, and there are things like fulvic acid, shilajit, which is an Ayurvedic form of organic matter, and fulvic acid is another way. I mean, there are trace mineral concentrates you can get. What's your favorite source of trace minerals?
I like shilajit. I mean, I'm partial to dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the taste of dirt, and I like it. It's a tarry substance, and I like that sort of thing. I like those sort of gooey, naturally earthy things. I think a lot of people probably would find that disgusting. So I think that, you know, finding the one that works for you is definitely the way forward.
Well, if you're into Chinese medicine and concocting all those Chinese herbs and brews, you're definitely an earthy person. So it makes sense to
right.
me. You would like shilajit. But the thing
well, and
is
here's sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, there's just mentioning the herbs themselves, one of my favorite recipes for many reasons in the book is a recipe for bone health vinegar. And bone health vinegar is something that has been made in traditional, or vinegars, herbal vinegars, have been made in traditional cultures forever. And one of the reasons why they're so effective is because herbs are just storehouses of minerals. So as soon as you put them into the vinegar, it releases the minerals and the nutrients far more effectively than they would just by your digestive system. So herbs and any of the herbal supplements that you take or that you might want to use or making your own bone-building vinegar is going to really supply you with very good and very balanced trace minerals as well.
So what are your favorite herbs to use in a vinegar? I guess you just put them into some vinegar and let them...
Yeah, you fill up a big sort of gallon glass jar with as much raw herb material as you can, and I use raw apple cider vinegar, and it sits for 6 weeks, and then it's finished. In the book, there is a list of my favorite recipes. I mean, one of the great herbs for overall health and women's health is stinging nettle. Another one is horsetail because it's very high in silica, and silica is actually deficient in a lot of Western diets, especially if people don't eat a lot of plant matter. Stinging nettle, red clover is another great traditional herb for women for all sorts of reasons, very high phytoestrogen content as well. It actually has some phytoestrogens that soy doesn't have, so it really rounds out the phytoestrogen aspect of the vinegar. Then there are Chinese herbs. There's guswebu and shuduan and a number of other herbs listed there. And these come out of the monks when, you know, the sort of trauma medicine of Chinese medicine started with monks in martial arts practice, you know, in B.C., 1000 B.C., when they were looking at we're practicing martial arts and we're injuring ourselves, we're breaking bones, we're having contusions, how are we going to heal ourselves? And they created formulas for all sorts of traumatic healing, including bone healing. So I've included these herbs as well because they're literally, one of them is called tonify bone fat, and the other one is called mend what is broken, and they just are very specific to healing bone in a very full way, because the herbs are not like Western medicine. It's not a single idea, a single molecule for a single function. The herbs are very complex. They have very many properties and very many chemicals in them, natural chemicals, and they create a holistic healing effect. So all of these herbs are great to put in your vinegar. And if you do make your vinegar, you find if you have a tablespoon of it, you're getting the equivalent of a 400 milligram, something around there, 350, 400, a calcium supplement. So plus all the trace minerals, plus vitamin C, plus vitamin D. You know, there's all sorts of benefits to making this type of concoction.
Can you put dry herbs in there?
Yeah, you can. I mean, fresh herbs are best, and sometimes it's hard to get them, and then I just use dry if I can't find them fresh, and they work just as well.
Okay. So let's talk about vitamin D as another one of those key essential vitamins or hormones, as the case may be, for bones.
Mm-hmm. Vitamin D is key because without it, you're not going to absorb your calcium. There are two places in the intestine where your calcium is going to get absorbed, and the main one requires vitamin D, or else you'll absorb maybe 10% of the calcium. So it's really, really important for it to be there when you're having your calcium. It also functions in many other functions. Again, it's required for osteocalcin to function once it gets inside in order for the calcium that you've absorbed to be deposited. So it's part of this. It's a key part of the whole cycle in terms of bone. Although, you know, in Southern California, everybody's like, how could I be vitamin D deficient? It's so sunny here all the time. It's not possible. But if you consider where we came from, which is that we were outside almost all the time when we were original humans, and we originally developed the same body that we had then, and our entire body was uncovered and underneath the sun. So all of our skin was acting as an absorption plate for ultraviolet rays, which then get transformed in our body into a usable vitamin hormone, vitamin D, vitamin D3. So there's lots of talk of vitamin D deficiency around, and it does look that way. And considering where we came from, I think is really a key component of that. And sunshine is free for almost all of us. So there's a really available source of vitamin D right there if you can find the way and the time. If you live someplace where you can sit out in the sun for 20 minutes, you're going to really boost your daily intake.
Well, that's where I recommend people get their blood test done, their vitamin D blood test, because, you know, you may think you're doing a really good job at sitting out in the sun, but for a variety of reasons, you may not be converting it into vitamin D and therefore become deficient. So getting a blood test and seeing where you are on that reference range, I always recommend people go for the high end of the reference range, the top third of that reference range, is really critical because that will guide you if you need to then increase, add supplementation or increase supplementation. Personally, I think everyone should be taking vitamin D supplement because I rarely find anybody who is in the optimal range without it. I don't know if that's your situation as well, Laura, but you know, it's so critical for so many other benefits in the body. It has so many key physiological functions. In addition to bone, it's critical. So I just tell people, if you only can do one thing, get a vitamin D test, make sure you're in the optimal range, and take a good vitamin D supplement that keeps you up there as well. It could really help you
Right. Stay
healthy.
Yeah, it's true. The range is the blood test is the only way. You can't just tell people, here, take a vitamin D supplement. And one of the reasons is because vitamin D genetics, the genetics of how vitamin D is transformed and works in our body, is actually one of a very, very, you know, conserved across species. And there are lots of mutations and variations across cultures even, and certainly between individuals about how we're going to use that vitamin D. So everybody can't just take the supplement and assume, okay, now I've taken the supplement. The blood level, it really is the key indicator.
Yeah, well, that's true. Glad we agree on, once again. good. Okay, let's talk about the role of stress and bones.
Sure. Well, stress isn't good for anyone.
For anything.
For anything. There's no real positive effect. There's a minor positive effect, but that's for a different discussion. Stress in general is gonna release certain hormones, gonna release cortisol, and this just has a detrimental effect on your bones for long term. In the short term, these are very useful, but in the long term, cortisol will actually deteriorate your bones. So it's even there's even a direct effect from the situation. In a sort of broader sense, you're gonna higher stress. You're gonna sort of start creating inflammatory molecules this way, and again, you have an indirect effect on the bone. You have inflammatory molecules actually deteriorating or interfering with bone turnover, interfering with bone rebuilding. So stress is just simply not a positive situation for your body in terms of even the mechanical structure of your bone, for sure.
I just don't think people really understand that connection with stress and creating this cortisol, the stress hormone, and how it contributes to pulling out the calcium, making poorer quality bones. And I don't, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time to get into the traditional Chinese medicine model of bones, but maybe we can just take a little bit of time, because I am really fascinated with the Chinese understanding their paradigm of kidney energy and how this energy is incredibly important to preserve, because it impacts bones. Can you just say something briefly about that?
Sure. The Chinese generally would, if you diagnose something like osteoporosis, you're diagnosing a kidney deficiency, a kidney essence deficiency, or a kidney yin deficiency, a kidney yang deficiency. And I think people generally understand the idea of yin and yang, yin being sort of the more earthy, feminine, fluid type of substance, and yang being energetic, being masculine, being the sun, being that sort of power. So it's like matter versus energy, and the two things working, not versus, but the two things working together. Matter needs energy in order to be alive, and energy needs matter in order to come to exist, really. So all of these things work together, and when the Chinese are looking at a osteoporosis or a bone condition, you're looking at a yin and a yang deficiency, and generally in older people, you're seeing both. And what we're looking at in terms of the idea of essence, kidney essence, is what have you inherited from your parents? And you could look at that as genetics in a way, but I don't think it's exactly genetics. What is the epigenetics also that you've inherited from your parents? Not only the genes, but how do they function? How do you respond to stress? How do you respond to life? And so these are the questions of essence. And then there's also the essence, what sort of the postnatal essence. What have you generated over your life? Have you taken care of your essence? Have you spent your essence? You know, have you? What are the interplay of all of those things? And so we look at those concepts. And that's a step back from saying, what does your bone look like, right? But in that way, Chinese medicine is very holistic medicine, because if you're looking at osteoporosis, there's a really good chance that you have other either deficiencies or weaknesses to your system and to your body. So if Chinese medicine is going, we're not going to say, okay, now we're just going to fix your bone. We're going to say we're going to fix the entire mechanism around which your bone then becomes healthy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and to me that is so profound to really understand that what's going on in our bones is a symptom of really a condition and a compromised function that is happening within our body. And it's showing up in our bones, but it probably is showing up in other areas if we were to look as well. So to regenerate bones, or to do the bigger job of regenerating our body, we need to understand the role of proper nutrition, putting healthy, nourishing food in, taking out toxic foods. We need to look at managing stress. We need to look at the right type of exercise. We need to understand the role that meditation plays in our life. We need to put all those pieces together, because ultimately, I don't personally believe that what's happening in our bones is separate from what's happening in our overall health and well-being. And we need, we just need a plan. We need a strategy that nourishes our body. So if in the last couple of minutes that we have, gone really fast, Laura. First of all, what's the best website for people to go to learn more about your work if they want to see you as a patient in California, in Southern California, and to get
your book? It's drlaurakelly.com.
Okay.
That's where I post a lot of information about my experience as a doctor. I really love sharing that. And they can contact me through that. And also there is a website for the book, which is thehealthybonesbook.com, and I can also be contacted through that website.
That's great. I do recommend people pick up that book, The Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook, because it's just filled with important information for anybody who wants to have strong, healthy bones at any age. Can you just give us one nutritional tip or one of your favorite recipes, in addition to the vinegar, the bone vinegar one, that you think is really important for us to include in our diet?
Let's see. One.
Well, I'm sure there are many.
I don't know how your listeners feel about raw dairy. Is that something that they'd be interested in, that you guys would?
Well, I think they would if they could get it.
Ah, okay, right.
Because California, actually, you can get raw milk, right? You can buy raw milk.
You
can't buy it in places, well, where I live in Oklahoma, I know you can't buy it. I haven't seen it in New Jersey or New York.
Okay. well, I won't discuss that delicious homemade ice cream recipe then.
What about raw milk that is, pasteurized?
Well, the problem for me with pasteurized dairy in general is that if you're going to use it as a calcium source, as a bone generating food, it's actually not very efficient.
Right.
Because one of the measures for pasteurization is, you say, is this milk pasteurized? Is alkaline phosphatase.
Okay, well, we unfortunately can't get in there, but hopefully it whets people's appetite to get the book. Dr. Laura Kelly, thank you so much for all your wisdom today. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's been a pleasure.
And to all of you listening, thank you. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.